Hey parents, we all know summer break is for fun, but it's also a time when kids can start losing some of the progress they made during the school year. We want them to stay engaged and keep those young minds active. Between camps, vacations, and family time, it can be tough to keep a learning routine going. That's why I want to tell you about IXL. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts. From pre-K through 12th grade, IXL offers personalized interactive learning that adapts to each child's level and pace. It's an easy way to keep learning going through the summer and helps kids feel confident heading into the next school year. Studies show kids who use IXL score higher on tests, proven in all 50 states. And get this, IXL is used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. That's a huge endorsement. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really? AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up.
Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille, fade away.
Bryant for the win. Bang! James puts up the three. Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius, and we're going to have two pods today. A little bit later, we're going to have our reaction to the Lakers selecting Cameron Carr with the 24th pick in the draft. But first, some breaking news right before we hit record. Austin Reeves agrees to return to the Lakers on a 4-year, $185 million deal, about $46 million a year. D, what's your reaction?
This is a max contract. It's a big number. Headed into the offseason, all the reporting around the Austin stuff was get ready for a big deal. Get ready for a deal that starts in the 40s. And I was both bracing myself for that reality while also holding out hope that the one quote that we ever got from Austin Reeves on this was like, he didn't necessarily need every single dollar of his max, but he got every single dollar of his max. It's my understanding, looking at the deal, that if this is an ascending contract, Pete, the numbers will basically be $41.3 million, $44.6 million, $47.9 million. And then in that final year, which is a player option, $51.2 million in the fourth year of that contract. So this is less than his overall max in that he could have gotten a fifth year with another 8% raise on top of the $51.2 million or whatever number that I just said. But he gets the flexibility of a player option on the fourth year. So this is everything him and his agents would have wanted from the Lakers. They get the most money, they get the highest raises, and they get a player choice in year four. And so I'm simultaneously super happy for Austin Reeves, who was an undrafted player and made scraps for two seasons and then basically got boxed into an Arenas rule, quote unquote, max for him in his next 3 years. So I'm happy for him. This is generational wealth. This is a ton of money super happy for Austin Reeves. He can go buy a golf course now, Pete, and put it in his backyard. But there's real sticker shock to the number. And this will impact team building, not this season, because in terms of order of operations and when he'll sign the deal, his deal will be signed last using bird rights so they can go over the cap to sign him. But in years 2, 3, and potentially 4 of his contract, if he picks up the player option, there will be ramifications of paying him this much money. So I'm sort of yes and no with this in terms of happy for Austin, but understanding that the Lakers have put themselves in an interesting place to navigate in terms of roster construction, now built around a highly dynamic backcourt that is going to make basically $100 million a season.
Yeah, my position on Austin's contract was I didn't care that much so long as it was a movable contract down the line and not in a you have to attach assets type of way. And so there's a difference to me between what a player's market value is and what they can make on a championship team. Your market value in a league of 30 teams, if one team wants to offer you $45 million a year, and I think there were more than one that was willing to do that, that's what you're worth, right? If one team offers you $45 million, but everybody else wants to pay you $30, you're worth $45 million because that's what you can get. That is not the same to me, though, as what a player could make in the apron era, especially on a future title team. And I think that this deal puts a ton of pressure on the Lakers this offseason to get their work done and take advantage of that $20 million cap hold, which is why I didn't really care that much. It's like, this is the season that you set up all the contracts to expire to be able to make your big moves. You've got a really good player on a cap hold that's way below what he ended up making. And this is the time to take advantage of that. So if you bring back LeBron, for example, and he retires after this season, you go into next year with Austin and Luka combining to make about $100 million with the salary cap, I want to say in the low 170s, maybe mid 170s. To put a percentage on these numbers too, Austin will be making between like 25 and 27-ish% of the projected salary cap going forward. So it's relatively stable in terms of like what those numbers mean.
It should be 25%. This is a point I was going to make. The cap's projected to go up by 10% every season, and Austin's raises are 8%. So in theory, the cap should actually outpace Austin's contract.
Got it.
That said, those are projections on the cap going up 10%. It was supposed to go up 10% this last offseason, and it didn't. It went up 9%.
Right.
And so I'm wanting to make sure that we're on the same page with that. But yes, it should be relatively stable.
Yeah, and appreciate that clarification. I forget which cap guy I saw projecting the percentage. But yeah, it's around right around 25% relative to how it's going to come in. And so I do think it's important to talk about it in that type of way. And the point that I was making earlier about what your market value is and, you know, you are worth what one team, just one team is willing to pay you. You know, you compare his salary to a lot of the guys around him in that range, and there are some good players there, but there are also a lot of teams that are like, that's part of the reason why that team's not going to contend for a title. And this to me is the bar the Lakers are at. And I hate to be such a Debbie Downer on a few elements of the Lakers right now. Just, it's such a high bar, D, that I think the Lakers are very much sprinting toward being a very good team that wins a round or two in the playoffs, but never actually competes for a title. But I think a lot of that will be determined by what they do coming up next. And I don't think that getting to the, hey, let's compete now with Luka Doncic, there was a route to doing that and losing Austin altogether. You know what I mean? Which were really the two options here. So again, I just think it puts a lot of pressure on this offseason, but there always was that pressure. And so, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound. But beyond this offseason, I have some concerns in terms of team building.
It's going to be tricky. The Lakers now have two max players on their roster. They had two max players before, too. LeBron made slightly less than the max, but LeBron was on a 35% max and Luka was on a 30% max. Now, Luka's going to be on a 30% max still, and Austin's going to be on a 25% max. The numbers look big, so that's why I think you're right in terms of talking about percentages. The Lakers are going to pay two starters roughly 55% of the salary cap for the foreseeable future. Luka's going to get 8% raises. Austin's going to get 8% raises. If the cap goes up by 10%, this will help the Lakers, so to speak, because the cap will grow at a slightly bigger rate than the rate that the Lakers' star players are getting their raises. But that slight outpacing is going to be not super significant in terms of their ability to continue to stack contracts. There's a much larger zoomed out team building conversation to have, but I'd actually like to have that conversation after the team is built, because forecasting anything for this season, Austin's contract for this season does not matter. He's going to make $41 million or whatever. It doesn't matter. Within the context of team building, he's on a $21 million contract for this season. It absolutely does not matter. And so that pressure that you were talking about actually hasn't changed much for this summer within the context of like getting as close as you can to being a championship roster. The thing is, though, is that where it does matter is beyond this season. How much work have you actually done? And what are the avenues for you to improve your roster moving forward? So let's take a quick break here, Pete. And when we come back, I want to continue this whole conversation about Austin and team building and everything else.
Isn't it crazy that America is turning 250 years old? I mean, look how far we've come. Now, we've got coolers in our sofas, light-up cup holders, and power-articulating headrests. When it comes to furniture worthy of this major milestone, Bob's Discount Furniture has all the styles all of America wants at the everyday low prices we deserve, backed by tons of five-star reviews. Check out the Sedona Power Reclining Sofa, a genuine leather one-stop shop for relaxation with built-in charging, cup holders, and supportive bobopedic seats, perfect for lounging in the AC all day. You can even complete the look with the matching love seat and recliner. Throwing summer parties? The Homeworks dining set features comfy bobopedic seating and clever storage built right into the table and bench. Or customize your space with the customer favorite modular Bob sectional. It has over 1,000 five-star reviews, family-proof construction, and wireless charging for hundreds less than the competition. At only $250 per piece, building your dream sectional is incredibly affordable. Celebrate the 4th at Bob's. It's where America shops for furniture.
Baseball is back, and BetMGM, official partner of Major League Baseball, is bringing the heat all season long. Step up to the plate all season with Swing for the Fences, the free-to-play game where every swing could score you rewards. We're talking parlay boost tokens, odds boost tokens, same-game parlay boost, and even bonus spins all season long. And the action doesn't stop there. Get more out of every at-bat with MLB same-game parlay boost. Stack your picks and boost your potential payout. Plus, lock in bigger value with MLB odds boost tokens and MLB parlay boost tokens all season long. More boosts, more swings, more chances to win. Download the BetMGM app and step up to the plate today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus and present in Ohio. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards payback and unrestricted withdrawable funds. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
I think the point that you made leads to the idea that the Lakers have to end up in a place where if it doesn't work out, you have a championship caliber team and you could move Austin and picks or Austin and say, you know, a young player that somebody likes for somebody who is a better number two option. But you need to have that structure in place around him. And that's part of the reason why, you know, they've got to do all that work this summer, D, is that, again, I think that that's the framework that they're going to have to operate under, because that is second star money, right? Like you just laid out, like that is, you're no longer in that, like, well, we could add another third guy in the 40 to $50 million type of range, which is usually where your best players come in. It's like one of either Luka and Austin would have to go in that circumstance, and Luka would not be the guy there. So yeah, they'd have to have at least the infrastructure in place around that to just trade one second star for another. But of course, you know, Austin and Luka have been good. Their regular season numbers are very good together. You know, the best this team was over the course of this season was right at the beginning with just Luka and Austin. And then when they were together and LeBron was alongside them in that March as well. And very curious to see what happens with LeBron, especially in this context, because again, you're not really able to replace LeBron after this offseason. So if he falls off of the books. So what are your thoughts on that, D, about moving forward? Like, obviously we all hope it works out and everybody loves Austin. And I hate being in this position of like arguing against this because I really like Austin. Like, he's been one of the funnest parts of the 2020s as a Laker fan. And there would be like, I would tear up if I saw Austin Reeves holding a championship trophy in a Lakers uniform. You know what I mean? Like, I really, really want that to be the outcome and give me all the plates of crow possible if it doesn't.
And, you know, spoiler alert in terms of language here, Pete, I'd also be really fucking sad if the Lakers lost him this offseason.
Yes.
And he was doing what Alex Caruso did for OKC.
Well said. Yes.
We'd be stabbed in the ribs every time we see Caruso, you and I, offline.
It's just the worst.
Like, I could literally feel your head shaking and your anger brewing through the text messages. We're so upset about it still. We'll carry that forever. It's like a certain part of sports fandom. The one that got away in terms of sports is like such a strong feeling. So I'd be sick if Austin went to like Detroit, right? Was like one of the teams that's being sort of pressed up in this idea within the context of Austin getting paid what he got paid. Detroit's a really good team. They sort of flamed out in the playoffs, but they were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. If they add a player of Austin Reeves caliber to their team, maybe they don't struggle to create as much offense as they did. And they have a true number one, and Durin gets slotted more appropriately and like their team is maybe better and who knows what they do. Could you imagine if in a year or two you see Austin Reeves
in the Eastern Conference final
next to Cade Cunningham and Jalen Durin? We'd be like, bro, what happened?
Yeah.
Right. So anyways, to your point though, with the contract, the last point I want to make about the actual dollar amount that he makes is that the Lakers are also paying for things that are not on court production with Austin Reeves. The whole, like, we love Austin Reeves. He's a great story, Austin Reeves. Everyone loves Austin Reeves. That contributes to, like, the work environment
Absolutely. In
which you are placing him into, which accounts for some of his value. LeBron James, throughout his prime, could have been, like, the biggest jerk ever. He could have actually just been a true asshole. And he still would have made the max year after year after year, not just because of all his on-court production, but because he fills every arena that he goes into. Like, there's other value that exists within the context of a player like that. And teams pay for that in their contracts all of the time. All of the time they pay for it. And I would argue the Lakers are paying for some of that now with Austin Reeves. They're paying for the fact that him and Luka are really close. They're paying for the fact that he's a very like low maintenance player within the context of their locker room. They're paying for the fact that he's like a good leader and like a bounce back guy and someone who's always sort of going to be there and supporting of everyone. It rings out to me that when I listen to Anthony Davis talk, for example, he will be like, no, my guy is Austin Reeves. Mm-hmm. That's my dude. Of all the players I miss the most, it's Austin.
And this is a universal thing. Like, Mikal Bridges on that hilarious IG live he did recently, yes. Right?
Like, he was like, Austin Reeves.
And this is everybody. Everybody loves Austin. But there's also a danger to that too, right? Like, this isn't just a, hey, let's everybody get along social club, right? You got to be able to do it. And at the highest levels of basketball.
So let's pivot back now to like the team building stuff, right? And like the actual on-court stuff and the production and what it means to build out a roster. And I do think that the onus on the Lakers being able to tangibly say, and this is with LeBron sort of looming out there, like, no, we need to actually put in an infrastructure that accounts for a LeBron return while also accounting for the day that LeBron is not here. And one of the things that I think is pretty critical within this, Pete, is like the salary slotting of how much a guy can make. Because so like, let's say the Lakers were to pay LeBron $20 million or more. like I use that number because there's no functional way to get up to that number through an exception, right? So it's just like, if you pay any player more than the mid-level exception, if that player leaves your team, there is no functional way to replace his salary slot. It just falls off your books and that's that. So one of the things that I think back to the Warriors team that Kevin Durant left. When Durant left, they purposely did a sign and trade to the Nets in order to take back D'Lo's big contract so that they could maintain that salary slot. And maintaining that salary slot allowed them to turn D'Angelo Russell into Andrew Wiggins, and then Andrew Wiggins helped them win a championship, right? And then Wiggins' salary slot ultimately became Jimmy Butler, and they've been flipping that salary slot basically every one or two seasons in order to continue to be able to build up their team. And this is the one year where the Lakers have salary cap space, right? And so to me, this puts the onus on them to try to figure out, can we get a third player who's not named LeBron James? Because there is no long-term future with LeBron James on your team three seasons from now where he's making upwards of $25 or $30 million. Can they get a player who is worth $25 or $30 million on their team next season? Because the team building aspect that you're talking about of a player who then slots next to Luka and Austin, who is good enough that helps put the Lakers into contender status so that if they're close, but not close enough, that Austin could be flipped potentially for a better number two who also slots next to Luka and next to that third player who you're paying a lot of money. That is the pathway for the Lakers now, Pete. And that's independent of LeBron James. LeBron can be the cherry on the sundae for that idea this upcoming season, but you can't build your roster out with the idea that LeBron is going to occupy one of those salary slots for the long term, because once he falls off your books, he's gone forever. Mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to sign and trade him somewhere else the way that the Warriors did with Durant, in my example.
Yep, and that's exactly why I'm very curious to see how far above the MLE the Lakers would go for LeBron to be able to keep him. Because as you said, that is really going to be the only tool going forward after this summer, assuming that they fill up all of those salary slots. Let's go to break here. And when we come back, I want to talk about Austin's gotten better every year that he's been a Laker. And I think that to get to contender status, that's going to have to continue. And I want to go to break and want to talk to you about what we want to see.
Game day at my place is kind of a big deal. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor patio setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grilling accessories, Wayfair's got it all, and it shows up fast. I'm talking championship level, fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game and head to Wayfair.com now to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Not all electric vehicles are designed the same. Toyota Electric is built to work for you. Grounded in years of proven engineering, it feels intuitive from the start. The Toyota BZ for smooth, everyday driving. The BZ Woodland for all-terrain capability. The all-new CHR for an instant, responsive drive. It's not just electric, it's Toyota Electric. We make it easy. Toyota, let's go places.
So I remember D early in his second year being like, I think we should give this dude the ball. After in the first year, I was like, this guy needs to shoot. He's really good. And he turned 28 in May, which is usually a good deal beyond where I'd hope for a player to continue to develop and improve, but had a major role change where this is going to be year three of basically him being the point guard. And even in that OKC series, that's the highest level of mastery that I think you have to reach to be able to win a title, is to be a point guard against that type of pick and roll defense. And we saw improvement over the course of that series from him. And I'm curious, what would you like to see growth wise to be able to get to the point where it's like, no, we don't need to move this dude for a better number two?
One of the things I think is going to be most important is the shooting. So for all the on-ball stuff that you're talking about, which I think is super critical, Austin's probably still going to play anywhere between 25 and 40% of his minutes with Luka Doncic. And so as much as you can be an on-ball player next to Luka, like Austin will be,
right,
but he's still playing with Luka Doncic. And so the degree to which he's actually the point guard in those minutes is going to be much less than the other 60% of the game.
And right? This is a great point. And that percentage goes up during the playoffs when everybody's minutes get maxed out to 40. So this is a great point. He's got to be a really high-end off-ball player as much as anything.
Yes, and to be as good as an off-ball player as he can be, I think the shooting is the piece where it's just like, I get that you shoot 36% on threes or whatever you shoot. I need that number to be closer to 38, and on catch and shoots, particularly unguarded catch and shoots, I need that number to legitimately be 40. I need it to be where it's almost like Rui, where I think it's going in almost every single time. Right? Because if he could be that level of shooter as a spot-up threat or someone who can be on the weak side, I think his on-ball chops or his ability to attack a closeout or just be an off-the-dribble guy gets amplified to such a degree that, to me, that's the bridge skill for him. I get that maybe you'll talk about like on-ball decision-making stuff and things of that nature, which are critical to me. But in terms of a bridge skill, it's the shooting to me. Where are you at, though?
That's my number one thing as well. But since you've talked about that, I want to see, and I guess this is in the family, just higher volume from mid-range. He's such a good speed attack player that Kobe used to always preach the idea of move, counter move. Do one thing really well, and then when the defense reacts to that, counter their reaction. That's all you really need to be able to do. And one thing that I loved in the OKC series that I thought he did a better job of as it went on, it was just like, hey, pull up before you get all the way to the rim. And I felt like there'd been a dissuasion of him taking those attempts in just this broader idea of get to the rim or shoot threes. And that's what everybody wants to do. But as we saw with Jalen Brunson, and this is really every single NBA playoffs, being able to hit those tough middies is one of the golden skills to be able to win a championship. And Austin's awesome at that. So I would much rather him, rather than driving over and over into the teeth of the defense and trying to get all the way to the rack, where he's very good at that. Like, there's a lot of those where it's like, man, pull up and take that 8-footer, that 12-footer, and do that at high volume and make them really, really guard you in that area.
Pete, what were Austin's two biggest shots of the season, would you say?
Oh, man, that's a tough one.
Because I have two in mind, but I'm wondering if I... Sorry, I'm putting you on the spot here a little bit.
The putback off of the missed free throw against Denver would be one on a little floater. Then the game winner against Minnesota, which was also on a one-foot floater. Yep.
Those were the exact two shots I was talking about, and those are sort of tough, short mid-range, medium mid-range shots against contested defenses where the paint's basically walled off to you and you've got to do something with the ball. Those shots were out of necessity, right? Coming down to the last second. And so I get that it's hard to replicate that necessity, that urgency, when there's 14 seconds left on the shot clock and the buzzer's not sounding. But to your point, these are makeable shots for him. He is like a wonderful shot maker in the 15-foot and in range. And I would just love for him to be like, no, I can take and make this shot with some regularity, where I want Austin's three-point rate to be closer to like the 40% range, like 35 to 40% rather than the 50% range. And if it's over 50%, I think his game is out of balance at that point.
Totally agree with this. And while I would love for him to become that high 30s, low 40s type of three-point shooter, I actually think that's way more of a hope than the mid-range stuff. Because when his jumper goes, he can, like, airball shots. They'll just go sailing, right? This happens with some guys where they either have their jumper or they don't. And there are some times where they don't. And I think that's probably going to continue. There's been several years of this with Austin. But the mid-range stuff, when he takes them, he's usually money from there. It's just a matter of increasing a volume on something you're already good at rather than asking a 28-year-old to be fundamentally different as a jump shooter. I actually think this is more realistic to be able to really kill it in those mid-range shots.
Austin's great at touching the paint. And this is a point of emphasis for J.J. Redick within the entirety of the Lakers scheme. I think he really does rely on Luka and Austin to do this. And I think he definitely relies on Austin to do it from a speed attack perspective.
Luka can get there in a variety of ways, but Austin is really good at putting his head down and just basically beating a guy to a spot with straight line drives. And he'll cook at the top of his move or whatever. He's got some wiggle. But once he decides, I'm throwing the jets on, he can get there. So now let's take his two-point diet. If you're saying 60 to 75% of his two-point shots are going to be at the basket or in the restricted area, great. What I don't want is that number to be like, okay, well, all I'm doing is trying to get to the rim over and over and over again. He needs to diversify that. He needs to take the middies. He needs to take the pull-ups. He needs to add the floater more consistently to his game. And I think that it'll help him in terms of his foul drawing, which he's already very good at, and it'll round out his game. The fact of the matter is, Pete, is that when you take a max contract, then there becomes certain expectations as well for like what your production is going to be and how efficient you're going to be and everything else. You started this segment with Austin's gotten better every single year. And these are the micro improvements that need to come with his game, not necessarily to justify his contract, right? But that's what the money's for, right? We can reliably trust that you're going to deliver in these moments. And I think that this year, the injury sort of messed him up in terms of what we were hoping to see during the playoffs. But I agree with you. I thought by the end of the OKC series, he had figured some things out within the context of what it meant to be an on-ball shot creator against that level of defense, particularly in a series without Luka, where it was just him and LeBron, where it's not going to be like that. He's not going to have to carry that big of a load against that level of defense.
Yeah.
Like, as long as Luka's on his team and healthy.
100%. But I do think that it could be great experience toward that in the future when he does have to at least carry a unit without Luka on the floor in those high-level games. I think that that's going to be very valuable for him. This last part, D, I wanted to flip it to a team-building idea and kind of flip it to the defensive end. And it's not about Austin specifically, but it's more one thing that happened in the OKC series that will happen over and over again in high-level basketball is they kept getting Kennard and Austin as low men because we switch everything and then eating off of that. The Lakers, we've got Luka and Austin written in pen. They can't be a switch everything team to the degree that they were these last couple of years. But the degree that they were these last couple of years, I'd argue, is a result of not having a reliable five that can run all of the different types of pick and roll coverages. I say all that to say we have to come out of this summer with a good defensive five that can allow you to run drop, allow you to shock, you know, show high at the level of the ball, and switch. I'm not saying that switching should be out of the team's diet, but if Austin is one of our most frequent rim protectors this upcoming playoffs, we're going to lose, and it's not going to be Austin's fault. With the talent that we have, the center spot, if on a Luka and Austin team, man, this is just so critical. I don't know who it's going to be, but they've got to nail this.
The Knicks just did this. They won a title with Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns as critical players within the context of their defense. They didn't switch everything. They got good at hedging with Brunson in order to try to avoid getting him into disadvantageous matchups. And I'm not saying the Lakers need to go to that sort of coverage exclusively, but they need a diet where stuff like that is included on their menu. It's one of the more important sort of nuance points that I think we should continue to hammer when we talk about the team building stuff is that the Lakers need the sort of defensive big who can capably run all of the coverages that you need an NBA team to be able to run in order to be effective on that side of the ball. They're starting at a deficit defensively. They just are. Like, Luka and Austin at their best, I think, are positive influences to a good defense, but they are not the guys that are going to carry a defense by any means, and they're not the sorts of dudes that you feel like, oh, you're a two-way ace who I feel comfortable. You're not Anthony Edwards. You're not prime Jimmy Butler. You're not, right?
And this is not uncommon amongst the high-end shot creators. Very few guys can do both on both ends, but both guys come with a certain level of they want to pull Luka out to the perimeter, take advantage of lateral quickness, and they want to put Austin around the rim to take advantage of strength and size. And so you go into it sort of knowing how the other team's going to attack you, which can be an advantage, but you got to build around that knowing that that's what they're going to do.
Totally. And I think that, again, these are the team building aspects of what does the front office value in terms of player types and skill sets and everything else. We can talk about the money that he makes and everything else, and that's great, whatever. The bigger point to me is, though, is just like, look, who are you paying? Why are you paying them? And what are you paying them to do on the basketball court? I get why they're paying Luka. I get why they're paying Austin. They are very good at the stuff that you purport them to be very good at. The next guy up, Pete, are you going to pay a center who is better on defense than he is on offense? Are you going to find more wings who are very capable at like holding up defensively while still being able to contribute offensively as well? And vice versa, right? Like, oh, you're good on offense. Can you hold up on defense? Oh, you're very good on defense. Can you hold up on offense?
Two-way players?
The Lakers haven't had too many of those guys lately. They skew in either direction. And I think that for the overall conversation that we're having, their job was always going to be hard this summer, but the pressure to do it now just went up.
Yep.
Because they paid a guy who we all love a lot of money. And I get it. We saw this coming, but it's real now. And the summer is about to unfold.
Yep. And one of the first steps of that was the drafting of Cameron Carr, which I'm very excited about. We will be back a little bit later today. We're going to record that pod in a couple of hours. Hopefully a future two-way player, 3-and-D type of wing, and we'll get into all the details on him. But until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his 8th block shot. That an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one, miss it.
Bryant,
it's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant, yeah. And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bearers a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search the Great Bear Rescue to learn more.